Good evening. Welcome to the January 15th, 2019 meeting of the Tompkins County Legislature. Please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Roll call of members. Mr. McKenna?
Microphones aren't working.
Mr. McKenna?
Yes.
Mr. Morey?
Here.
Mr. Sigler? Ms. Black?
Here.
Mr. Sigler?
Here.
Ms. Black?
Here.
Ms. Champion?
Here.
Ms. Dawson?
Here.
Mr. Granison?
Here.
Mr. John?
Here.
Ms. Kellis?
Here.
Mr. Klein?
Here.
Ms. Corman has asked to be excused. Mr. Lane?
Here.
Mrs. McBean Claiborne?
Present.
Ms. Robertson?
Here.
13 members present? We have some. The first order of business is public privilege of the floor. Do we have some blue forms? I lied. The first thing is a poet laureate. I'm sorry. Hey, John. John Spence is the director of the Community Arts Partnership. Welcome, John. Every 2 years, we have a special process where CAP brings together a number of people, and they make a nomination of poet laureate for Tompkins County. So I'm going to let John talk about the process and our new poet laureate.
Very good. Thank you, Martha. Before I dive into all things poet laureate, I'd like to take just 1 minute to thank the members of this legislative body for the support of the arts that you've demonstrated over the years. I want to thank you especially for your support of the Tompkins Center for History and Culture. This support does not go by unnoticed and unappreciated. I would hope that the motivation for support goes beyond the economic impact of attracting tourists to our fair shores and that you see it as an affirmation of who we are as a people, a community that supports creativity, exploration, a diversity of expression, and a love of truth and beauty. We are blessed and we are enriched by the work that you do in this chamber. And for all the artists of Tompkins County that call Tompkins County home, I thank you. So, Zee Zahava is the outgoing poet laureate of Tompkins County, and I'm here to say that it has been a pleasure to work with Zee. She sent poems to me and 318 other people by email every Monday morning. She mailed the occasional haiku postcard to 75 individuals. She ran creative workshops at the History Center, at the Public Library, at Lifelong, at the CAP Art Space. She participated in the library's read-a-thon, raising over $1,000 for the public library. She organized public readings of other poets. She participated in CAP's four-day Spring Rights Literary Festival and the Cancer Resource Center's Women's Day of Renewal at La Terrelle. This is not a complete list of all that Zee accomplished in her years, 2 years as poet laureate, but it does give you a taste of the breadth and depth of Zee's activities. Would you please join me and see if you could stand in giving Zee a round of applause and thanks. And so, now to the 2019 Poet Laureate, Melissa Tuckey. By way of introduction, I'll read the opening of a letter of nomination for Melissa by Phoebe Allen Gustafson. Melissa Tuckey has a distinguished career as a poet, activist, organizer, teacher, co-founder of the Split This Rock, a national literary organization dedicated to calling poets to the center of public life. She has published three books, two of her own poetry, another on eco-justice anthology. Her work has been included in several other anthologies, journals, and collaborations. Besides her impressive resume, what makes Melissa a standout is her presence. Having attended several readings and workshops, I have found her to be passionate and real, professional and down to earth. Her reading voice is exquisite. Her poems evocative, creative, and heartfelt. They tell stories and they invite response. Melissa's resume is a lengthy listing of books published, awards and honors, readings, writing workshops, papers, and presentations. Ladies and gentlemen, here's looking forward to the year ahead and the voice of the 2019 Poet Laureate, Melissa Tuckey.
Thank you. Thank you. I want to thank CAP, and I want to thank all of you for your support of the arts. This is a great honor. I'm excited, and I look forward to serving the community and serving poetry. I'm going to read you two poems, not very long. And the first one I want to read is from the most recent work I've done, which is Ghost Fishing, an eco-justice poetry anthology. And this is an anthology of other people's work at the intersection of social justice and the environment. It's a culturally diverse collection. And you can get a copy at Buffalo Street Books. And this is my poem, Requiem. Okay. Unable to sleep, the blankets wrapped in waves, waves as tall as dreams, the dream world trying to make sense of the waking. Strange dream of flooded rivers, entire cities underwater. Look how the dead float, hair blossoming on the surface, and the daily hustle into streets filled with water. Going to get bread, going to get gasoline, and the dogs tied to lampposts, and the elders in chest-high water, waiting for rescue, and always the water rising, and we never know who it will take next, except that some houses are more sturdy than others, and some rescues come quicker or do not come at all. Remember when our beds were filled with oil? The sea was whispering from an open door as that viscous dark came spilling up and out and into every crevice of our dreams, all over our newspapers, into our laundry and hair. How it covered our hands and wouldn't wash out. We couldn't sleep at night, and the president ate shrimp and said, "None of this, though tragic, should interrupt our dinner." We who crawled once to these shores, having risen single-celled from the ocean floor, now standing in the mist of an invented world. Each morning, we step into our clothes, light the stove for breakfast, and those of us with privilege, we gas up and go. We who once had no claws, no hands, no way of grasping what we desired, and the waters keep seeping back in. Look how carefully zookeepers pack up those dolphins, airlifting them to safety, giving them massages to ease the stress. Give me a dog who isn't drowning, a tree not in flames, a flag that is not betrayal. Teach me how to build an ark big enough for everyone. And I'll thank you. I had an assignment to write about oceans, and I was writing that poem during that fall, not this past fall, but the one before that was just constant with its disasters. I'm going to leave on a note of resistance. And the second poem is poem for TSA officers who rifled our bags to dump homemade jam we were carrying as gifts. And this is a reminder that as we struggle to protect the earth, to live in harmony, to right our wrongs, the natural world is on our side. Poem for TSA officers who rifled our bags to dump homemade jam we were carrying as gifts. You never can tell what those peaches were doing naked together in that Guatemalan basket, or how the moon whispered to an underground of resurgent garlic winters when you thought the living world asleep. Beware the last red peppers of autumn, how they fatten into gorgeous fists raised at dawn in solidarity. Trust not the pickled relish. Keep an eye on those candied beets. Know that bees are amassing in goldenrod, hoping to keep their queen alive, as battalions of crickets play violin in the tall and anonymous grass. Trust not the sweet, sticky, sweat, sticky kitchen, uprising of steam as grapes roil into a delirium of kettle-shaking goodness. Keep an eye on that elder who ladles the whole sweet mess into a bell jar of singing jars, a bell choir of singing jars, each ping rousing unexplainable delight. Know that in kitchens throughout this land, such sweetness is gathering daily. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Melissa. We look forward to having you back anytime. Please do come when you have something to share, or you know, or just or tell us about your activities. We'd love to be in the loop. And I want to thank Leslie McBean Claiborne, who was part of the review committee for the Poet Laureate applicants. Thank you, Leslyn, very much. And again, thanks to John for running a great process and program with CAP. And Z, thank you so much as well. All right, I have some...
Martha?
Yes, Mike.
Two things. One is that I was interested to hear that when Z was the Poet Laureate, that she sent out regular poems. I would like to have been on that list to receive those.
Mm-hmm. Monday mornings.
I think that we would have been pleased to have done that, to have had those. And the second thing is, I really think we ought to have the Government Operations Committee look at securing a plaque that we could put in this room with the names of the Poet Laureates and have them added as we go along. So I'm going to suggest that.
Sounds a great idea. Good idea, Mike. Thank you. Thank you all. I'll buy a beer for anybody who can come up with all of the Poets Laureate that we've had. So I know, Leslie, you probably have, right? You can do it. All right. I've got some blue forms for public privilege of the floor. If you haven't filled one out, they're back there on the table. So I will go through here. The clock is up on the wall. You have 3 minutes, and by signing onto this, you agree to a three-minute time limit. You agree not to raise your voice. You agree to not to use lewd, obscene, profane, slanderous, or libelous language, or speak or act in a manner that would tend to incite a breach of the peace. You agree not to speak about county personnel matters. Personnel matters include comments about the job performance of named county employees other than elected officials. And after 3 minutes, you agree to leave the microphone and yield the floor. Transferring time to another person is not permitted. You agree that if you cause a disruption and are asked to leave, you will leave the chambers. So I've got Bill Kennedy Smith first and then Robert Lynch.
Hi. I understand that the DOT is doing an update today, and we were hoping to speak beforehand to
Bill, could you get a little closer to the mic?
Yes, I'm sorry. We were hoping to speak, us and some of the residents were hoping to speak again to on the issue for possibly own update and questions about what's going on. First of all, I will say that we are at the location 16 Hillcrest, which is throughout the EA that they've recently put out. I don't know if you've seen that. I hope you have been reading that and going through it. There's a number of interesting things in it. It's all new to us. We had filed a FOIL Freedom of Information for that back in August. We were not given our denial. We were given a blanket denial, but not until mid-November. So we never had any information about what was going on or anything until this EA just came out, really. And even in that, there's still some information that would be good to have. But in the meantime, the DOT, I will say, yes, they have been meeting with us and to hear our concerns and to do some mitigation. It has been some light mitigation. For instance, one of the things that came to us recently was on the big truck bay that they want to put out there. They had on the roof they wanted to put I Heart New York on it, so the airplanes can see it coming over. Great PR stunt, but when we look out our windows, we see a giant billboard, 100 feet wide, 50 foot. You know, so nobody wants that. And they were good about talking to us about it and agreeing to a neutral roof. So things like that. But I mean, really, the truth of it is there's no mitigating this site, given where it has been placed. The top northern part of that parcel, directly adjacent to us, Truck Bay, Salt Bay, still few hundred feet off. They had to move the Salt Bay back slightly because, indeed, what I was saying before about water going through our property, I had mentioned that here before. They did wetland delineation testing, and, indeed, it does include a wetland. So they had to move it back a bit. But the real thing is I want answered is why they didn't move the whole thing south in the first place, because they had room to do it, and this is a fact. I have analyzed the RPZ zones, the runway protection zone. It just covers a small portion of the southeast corner of that 53-acre property. I have distributed these to you, and red dotted is the entire property, 53 acres. There's black in the middle. That represents a southern portion of that property. May I have a few more seconds?
Yeah.
Thank you. That represents... You can see the road coming in. The black dotted line represents a kind of a mid to southern section, which is considerably further south and room west to have located this entire facility and keep it away from residents. At the last meeting, there was incorrect information given. Deborah, I think, had mentioned something about because of the height limits limited to the north. That's inaccurate.
Okay, finish up, please.
Will do. All right. If you analyze the elevation vectors, right now Tompkins County, the runway there, runway 14, is a non-precision runway. It's currently at 34, which means 34 feet out, 1 foot up. If you do the math out there, there is plenty of distance. I don't think, I don't know, Mike can answer this. My call, if they have any plans to changing it to a precision runway, which would make the angle narrower, but they still have plenty of time, plenty of room to move these back. And I would like direct answers as to why this was not considered in the first place.
Thank you so much, Mr. Kenny Smith. Thank you for the information. I understand tomorrow is the public hearing and public information session.
It is, but Lansing has no power to do anything.
So that's the place to take your concerns. I appreciate your being here. Thank you very much.
Sure,
Robert Lynch and then Sean Scanlon.
Good evening. My name is Bob Lynch. I am from the town of Enfield. How far we've strayed. I'm here tonight to urge this legislature to oppose a community investment incentive tax abatement for Travis Hyde Properties' redevelopment of the old county library. The IDA could consider this as soon as February 13th. Whenever I drive by what's left of the old library, I shake my head. A still serviceable building we could have used for some public purpose, sold by this legislature at a fire sale price, 8 cents on the modern dollar. But you had best of intentions. You wanted more affordable housing. And that's not bad. Instead of offering the library for bid, you sought proposals. Mass appeal senior housing was the goal. Travis Hyde Properties was among nearly a half dozen developers to show interest. At the Old County Library meeting on May 8th of 2015, Mike Ziegler asked, what kind of rents are we looking at? Frost Travis answered, a little more than $1,200 a month. 2 years later, September 2017, a night Frost Travis's company bought the old building, Anna Callis asked, what about rents? Now the figure was up to $1,600 for a one-bedroom. No longer affordable, perhaps, but still middle income. Quoting Frost Travis directly, we're trying to keep it not luxury. We're trying to hit mid-market because I really think that that's an underserved section of the market. There's plenty of luxury housing. It's the middle of the market that there's nothing there. Well, now, sadly, the goalposts have moved again. Last week at City Hall, Frost Travis cast aside all pretense of affordability as he sought city endorsement for his tax abatement. This is a luxury building, Frost conceded. Construction costs made it so. Estimated rents now, $1,900 for a one-bedroom, $3,000 for a three-bedroom. That's $36,000 a year. Out of my range, probably yours too. It's the reality of Ithaca, Frost told us. Okay, here's another reality. This is Ithaca. We are different. We do not reward misrepresentation. If Travis Hyde cannot make money serving the mid-market, as he promised, then maybe Frost Travis must eat the loss. Did Frost Travis betray this legislature's trust? I think so. And I encourage the county attorney to study to see if we have any recourse. But I do know this. Travis Hyde does not deserve this abatement, not one with its initial 90% reduction in taxes. And when Frost taxes go down, mine go up. This county's industrial development agency should not grant Travis Hyde a tax abatement, and I urge this legislature to go on record and say just that. Travis Hyde should pay a price. This is not housing for the gray-haired masses. It's housing for the gray-haired 1%. It's luxury housing that even Frost Travis admits we do not need. We owe Frost Travis Hyde Properties no favors. Let's not give him any. We've been misled. Thank you.
Thank you, Bob. Sean Scanlon and then Sue Reed.
Good evening. My name is Sean Scanlon. I'm a homeowner at 51 Hillcrest Road, and I'm speaking about the DOT relocation into our essentially Bill's backyard and into our view of our house as well. First and foremost, I'd just like to say that Lansing has no authority over this, and we were told this last night at the planning board, so we can go speak about it, but this is the group who sold the property in our neighborhood to put 30 or a big gas station and salt depot in our backyards. So we're here to speak about that and to bring it up with you and urge you first and foremost to find another open space that is not up against a residential neighborhood. You're putting this literally in our homes. And so if I know it's none of your homes, but this is where we live. Bill's house is a historic designated property, as talked about in the EA assessment. And it's amazing that this thing, like, hunkers over their home, as well as Justin's home is the other house that it abuts. A couple other points just are incredible. We're going to build a gas station at the end of a runway. Just want you all to know that that's the plan of the DOT here. There's already been an accident there from what was said last night at the planning board. And it's also on top of a wetland, for God's sakes. Along with that, across the street directly, there is more than 1,000 open acres north of the airport and east of the airport, nowhere near residential, that is also adjacent to the airport location. We have no idea what has been considered as alternatives by DOT. They told us last night, I'm indicating to my colleagues here from DOT, that they did look at places in Dryden previously and apparently down by Home Depot, but it seems to be that there is a real lack of imagination on behalf of where to put a gas station and a salt truck depot with plows that are going to be coming through. In the environmental assessment, it estimates at peak 30 trucks an hour, 30 snowplow trucks an hour, literally in the backyard, we'll be able to see them and hear them all the time. The estimate in the environmental assessment, when you look at this, 2 decibel increase in noise for our neighborhood. Does anyone believe that? Has anyone ever heard snow truck, ever? It's incredible the mistakes that are in this report. It's incredible the lack of concern, the lack of engagement with any of us. We were not given any notification about this discussion of selling this property when you all did this summer. And we live right in this place as well. Finally, and the most obvious and blatant insult to all of us is the $43 million benefit that you all get to have with the developers locally to redevelop where the current DOT is on top of us. We already have the poisoned area north of the airport that Cornell did that we live with just across the street, and now you're adding this. Thank you very much, and please reconsider.
Thank you, Sean. Sue Reed and then Justin Kimball.
Hello. Thank you for allowing me to speak. I came earlier this year, or last year, I came in August to speak to you, and I told you then that my address is 39 Hillcrest Road, Ithaca, New York. However, I do not vote in Ithaca because I live in the city of Lansing. However, somebody in this council has decided that because there is a DOT facility down here, which has land around it, that could have some additional building on it, but nobody wants to live on it because of the DOT and what their function is. Why then is this given to the opportunity to Lansing? Why is it dumped into Lansing when Ithaca doesn't want it? I would like to have an answer to that question. Secondly, this one single action that this elected community did changed forever the entire residential character of the city of Lansing, and it will never be recouped. And as it was sold last night to all of us, we have no recourse that it's being done by the county. I would like you to know something. For 135 years, this man's home was owned by the LeVar family. That was from 1874 until 2013. In 1968, the airport approached this family and asked to purchase this particular land for a Safeway at the end of the runway of the airport. They did not want to sell it. They wanted to keep it in their family, but they were forced by the county to be able to, or I mean by the airport, to be able to buy it. They bought it for $32,000, $32,500. It now recently just sold for $800,000. Please help me understand why this is happening to the town of Lansing. I thank you for listening with your ears. Thank you.
Thank you, Sue. Justin Kimball and then Paul Rossi.
Hello, my name's Justin Kimball. I live at 50 Hillcrest Road. I'm again speaking about the DOT issue. Again, this is just going to be huge for me, and it's really going to cripple an investment property and my home that I live on. And I'm just imploring you and begging you, you know, the DOT has options of where they can put this. They can move this salt barn. We can't move our homes. They can move this, plow truck area. I'm on well water. This is going, a gas station, all this salt activity, it's going to leach into the ground. It's going to get there somehow. In the EA, yes, they mentioned for it. They accounted for that. But I have well water. This is going to come into my drinking water. I seriously need to consider, you know, I bought my home 2 years ago. Am I now going to turn around and sell it because I'm forced out? I'm just imploring anybody that will listen and please say that we don't have an option to move. The DOT can draw up another plan. They can move it a little bit further south, still being in out of the runway zone, still being able to do business, still being able to operate. And, you know, in the EA, they also recommended that the site be shift south. If you read that, it's a long document. I understand that. But at this point, I know they're looking for the highest and best use of the property. And, you know, there's no residential area anywhere around where the DOT has their functions right now. There's no houses around there. It's completely commercial. There's bars. There's a golf course. There's Johnson's Boatyard. There's nobody around there whatsoever that's being affected. And now you're coming into the backyard literally 100 feet, 200 feet away from our property with lights, sounds, everything that's just getting bigger. And it just seems like we're really just begging and imploring anybody to help us out, anybody how they can. You know, I don't know who to turn to. I don't know where else to go. We feel very frustrated, and we're just asking that, you know, you help us out in any way that we can. You know, I don't know what that next step is. I'd be happy to take any kind of advice to do so, but it just kind of seems like we're being bulldozed. Our voices aren't being heard, and so we're reaching out to anybody that we possibly can. You guys at Lansing, anywhere that we can do. So I appreciate the time. Hopefully you guys can help us out in any way. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Justin. Paul Rossi is the last blue form that I have. If anybody else would like to speak, then go get a form and go on out. Thank you.
My apologies. I just wanted to bring something to your attention. First of all, thank you to the legislators who came to the last Ithaca Board of Realty event on home ownership, yes, in my backyard. A few months ago, I wanted to let you know that the follow-up event will be February 7th from 6 to 8. I believe that's a Thursday night at the space at Green Star, and it will be called Expanding Home Ownership in Our Neighborhoods. And, again, I'd like to have you all attend if you could. I will make sure that there are some snacks for you. I can't promise entertainment. But again, February 7th, 6 to 8 at the space at Green Star. And thank you again for how much you've been supportive of the Ithaca Board of Realty in what you've done here in your housing. And obviously tonight you've heard some issues with people, but I want to come again with my voice of positivity about how nice it is to be in front of this board. I travel around 17 different counties, and you all stand out compared to some of your neighboring counties and what you do with your board. So thank you. Even letting people speak at your meeting, it does not happen in every county in this state. So thank you so much for your openness. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Paul. Appreciate that. Is there anybody else who would like to speak to us? Thank you. And I will say that in a little bit on the agenda, we have representatives from DOT, but that will not be opportunity for a debate. That will be a presentation, and the public meeting is tomorrow in Lansing. I'm delighted to recognize Bill Goodman. Where'd you go, Bill? Yeah, hi, Bill. Bill Goodman, supervisor of the town of Ithaca. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Oh, thank you, Chair. I want to say hi to everybody. Wish you all a happy new year. I haven't been here in a while. I'm hoping this year to get over more often to give you some updates on the town of Ithaca. And I wanted to start out by saying thank you for picking your new poet laureate. Now, Melissa's actually an eco-village neighbor of mine and was recommended by another eco-village neighbor, Phoebe Gustafson, so I was happy to be here to support her as the new poet laureate. In the town of Ithaca, we're working on a number of issues, some of which you might have seen in the media last year. A big one right now is short-term rental regulation. We've got a committee that's working on coming up with some guidelines, and currently the draft that we're looking at only covers regulation of unhosted short-term rentals. So that's where somebody would be away from their house and renting the whole house out, as opposed to somebody who's renting out a room or who is present on the property while their guests are there as well. And we're looking at a limit of that in a calendar year of 29 days. You might remember that Cuga Heights last year passed an ordinance, and I believe their limit was 14 days for unhosted. We've had a lot of people starting to show interest in this, and so they've started to come to our committee meetings, so we'll be moving those meetings into our large boardroom to accommodate them. We're getting folks from some neighborhoods wanting us to decrease the limit down to 14. We've got other folks who want us not to put any limit at all, so we're trying to find the balance, and it's going to take a little while, I think, but we are moving forward on that. Some other things we're working on. We are actually getting ready soon to file a application for a DEC nuisance permit for deer hunting in the town, and perhaps later this winter, early spring, if we get granted the permit, we'll start a pilot program. Our conservation board and the committee that put together a report to the town board recommended that we start a deer management program, which would be using bow hunting at baited sites on property, private property that landowners have volunteered for this. And so we're going to start out perhaps with about 10 sites this year to see how the program works and then possibly expand that in future years. One of the other things that we've just decided to do is create a committee to look at our facilities needs, both short-term and long-term, both at our town hall downtown here and at our public works facility out at 7 Mile Drive. And I know you all are looking at your space needs. I know the city is looking at its space needs. And so I'm hoping that at some point we can all get together and talk and see if there are ways we can work together to find some synchronicities. But we'll be, as I said, we'll be starting that committee soon, and then we'll be in touch. Another item that I've been working on, which I think will come to fruition this year, is the creation of a sidewalk district in the town. We don't have any sidewalk districts yet, but because of some needs in the Forest Home neighborhood, I'm looking to get the town board to create a sidewalk district to help pay for some of the sidewalk improvements. And again, we're kind of using this as a test case because in our comprehensive plan, we do want to, you know, promote walkability and walkable neighborhoods throughout the town. We'll probably be looking at creating other sidewalk districts in other parts of the town to help fund some of the construction of new sidewalks. And then one of the big items is, again, trying to implement our comprehensive plan. We have been spending at least a year, close to a year and a half now, with a working group creating a draft for a form-based zoning code. And so, and if any of you have questions on any of these items and want to hear more detail from me, I'm happy to sit down with you or take a phone call or email. But form-based zoning, for those who might not be familiar, is to try and promote the new urbanist style of development, traditional neighborhood developments. It's sometimes called TND. And that we identified in our comprehensive plan, which at this point, we actually adopted it in 2014, so it's almost getting close to 5 years old. But zoning can take a long time. And so we're looking at implementing this primarily around the East Hill Plaza area up on East Hill, on South Hill at the intersection of 96B and King Road up beyond Ithaca College, and then on West Hill, in the area sort of between where Linderman Creek apartments are on Route 79 and the hospital. And so we've got a pretty good draft. It's about 130 pages. We're presenting that to the town board now and town staff, town departments to get their input. At some point soon, we'll be meeting with stakeholders, property owners in those particular locations. And then we'll also be having some public sessions, some public meetings to explain it to the public, in addition to the regular required public hearings that we'll have to have when we go for adoption. So those are a couple of things that are keeping us busy. I'll just end by saying, as a fellow public servant, I want to thank you all for the time and effort you put into public service. And I'm happy to take any questions if you want to take any time now, or as I said, I'll be happy to talk to people individually later.
Thank you so much, Bill. We really appreciate that report. Mike Lane.
Bill, how serious is the town board about trying to close Forest Home Drive?
The town board is not really serious right now. The town public works department seem to be more serious. They're currently, they just yesterday met with the guide rail manufacturer and installer to figure out what it might cost to repair and replace the guide rail there that is falling down. And so once we get some numbers and some estimates of what that would cost, then we'll revisit the issue.
Anybody else? Anna?
Thank you.
I'm very, very excited to hear that you're doing the form-based code. So that's one thing I just want to say. It's super exciting. I'm hoping there will be an executive summary.
Yeah.
So we can review it. I'm curious, has there been an identification of focused development areas in the town that you would like to see as a focus of density and walkability and development so that one of the goals might be to reduce sprawl and allow for those types of community-type developments? Is that?
Yeah, and so basically those areas that I mentioned around East Hill Plaza, South Hill intersection of 96B King Road, and then West Hill from Linderman Creek up to the hospital. Those are the areas that we identified in our comprehensive plan map as the areas to implement this form-based code. So those are the areas, and then the form-based code would allow for a lot more density than the current zoning there. Currently, those areas are either zoned low-density residential or medium-density residential. So in the form-based code, there's a lot more options, which would allow more units, smaller lots, and so encourage a lot more density that could then support some offices, some retail, some restaurants, businesses, and sidewalks would be required throughout these areas, so it would be all designed for walkability and bikeability as well. And the other area in our comprehensive plan that we're focusing on, and we're actually coming up with some new zoning for this, it's not going to be the same form-based zoning as those three areas I mentioned, but the Inlet Valley, what we call the Inlet Valley, which is about from the Ithaca Beer, the area where Ithaca Beer is, down to around the Eddydale Farm Stand along Route 13 there, because that's the area where we're wanting to encourage economic development in the town. And so we're rezoning down there. A lot of that right now is either light industrial or low-density residential, and we're going to rezone that so that we can encourage and promote a lot of the business we'd like to see there, which are primarily businesses related to agriculture, tourism, agritourism, agriculinary tourism, with state parks, Buttermilk Falls and Treeman State Park, and Ithaca Beer there, and we think that's a great area to try and build on that, the existing assets we have there, and encourage some more businesses to locate there. Yeah.
Henry Granison.
Bill, do you have a sense of the timing for the zoning for East Hill Plaza?
No. You know, we had thought for a while that Cornell was kind of on the fast track for that, and they had, you know, gotten some outside consultants, and they had that charrette last spring. And then, you know, I've kind of got the sense now that Cornell's focusing its attention on North Campus residential expansion and the new dormitories for students there, and they're kind of stepped back on East Hill Plaza, so I don't think anything is going to happen on that right away. We are planning to get our zoning in place because our zoning would kind of control what they can do there or encourage what we want to see happen there. And so we're hoping to get our zoning done by the middle of this year. And but as I said, I don't think Cornell is moving that fast on East Hill Plaza right now.
Amanda Champion.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for being here. Since I haven't talked to you in a while, I was just wondering, there was plans to, you know, to build the sidewalk up to IC, that hill. Is that, where do we stand with that?
Yeah, so the consultants are working on the construction drawings for that. We did recently hear that the state DOT has finally approved the narrowing of the section as you're coming from Ithaca College down into the city. Once you pass Coddington Road, where Coddington Road, you've got that real narrow lane there, and so we've finally gotten them to agree that we can use that space for the sidewalk. So that will help the engineers finish up the construction drawings. We've been talking with Ithaca College about maintenance of the sidewalk once it is built, and so things are moving ahead. I don't know when the drawings should be done, but once they're done, then we'll have put them out to bid, because I believe the state wants us to get that money spent soon and not hang on to it for a long time. While we're talking about spending money on walkability, I'll just say that we're at the very final stage of getting ready to finish the design work and start construction on the Lower Gateway Trail, which, for those who might be familiar, is the trail that will cross over the long unused Bridge to Nowhere down at the cross Route 13, where there's just one holdout. The landowners there who have the land, Widewaters Development out of Syracuse, who has land that Home Depot sits on, is they're giving us a hard time, and along with Home Depot, about getting a little tiny easement we need to access the trail from their parking lot so that we can get our construction vehicles up there. But I think we're getting close to finally getting there okay. And then I'm hoping probably this year that we can get some work done on it, so maybe at some point this year we can cut a ribbon and actually walk across that bridge.
That sounds great, Bill. Yeah. Thank you. Rich?
I just want to specifically say that is outstanding news. That is really great. I was recently had a chance to walk on the trail up on East Hill, where Cornell, the county, and town of Ithaca work together, and it is just great. And it's a great example of governmental cooperation, and certainly the town of Dryden and the town of Ithaca have really been leaders in trails, and you should be commended for it.
Thank you, Rich. And I should say there's lots of other stuff we are working on in terms of trails. In my mind, an extension of the South Hill Trail is not dead yet. It's not out of the question. I'm still hoping we can someday see an extension of the South Hill Trail. Of course, the Gateway Trail section we're working on now is the lower portion from Sandbank Road down to Buttermilk Falls and then across 13 over to where eventually it will connect to the Black Diamond Trail. The upper part of the Gateway Trail will depend on what happens with the Chain Works project, because it goes through the Chain Works property. And then the town is trying to figure out all the ways we can to help the state parks and the county to get the lower section of the Black Diamond done from Buttermilk Falls down to Lower Treeman State Park. So I am hoping that someday soon we'll be able to have this great interconnected network of trails throughout the county. So you can go from Tegannock Falls State Park all the way down to Brooktondale.
That's very exciting. Thank you, Bill. Anybody else? I just have a quick one on short-term rentals. You talked about these regulations on unhosted sites.
Yeah.
So if there's somebody where they are clearly living there and it's a one-bedroom in their house or apartment, is there any regulation?
No, we wouldn't have any regulations on those yet. The way things are going now, I don't know that we would get to any regulations of those for a long, long time. Once we get through this battle, I don't think we'll take up any other battles for a while. And then I should say that these regulations we're talking about now would primarily just apply in certain parts of the town, mainly our residential zones where we have the low density, medium density, and high density residential. So it would not apply in our conservation and ag zones, because we figure those are more rural. Houses might be separated from each other, so there might not be the same problems with noise and issues with neighbors. And it also does not apply along the lakefront, because we recognize that the lakefront homes are kind of a special case, because traditionally people have rented those out, in the summertime to. The current draft does not regulate those. We'll probably at some point come up with some regulations for lakefront renting, but there'll be different regulations and take into account the tradition of renting up there.
All right. Thank you so much, Bill. Please let your other board members know they're welcome as well, but don't let them know how many questions we asked. All right?
Yeah. All right. Thanks again, everybody.
It's great to see you. Thanks a million. Legislators, legislative privilege of the floor. Deborah Dawson.
Thank you, Martha. I wanted to start by commending Mike Hall, Ed Levine, and Tony Adams, the director of the Lansing Food Pantry, for working together and coming up with a way to help our TSA workers, the furloughed and unpaid workers at the airport. Tony Adams of the Lansing Food Pantry stepped up to help them in any way that she could to make her food pantry stores available to the TSA agents, and she has assured us that she will be there for them for the duration of this shutdown. I urge everyone to consider donating to your local food banks. There's a million ways to do it. I sent you all an email with an attachment that explains how you can donate to the Southern Tier Food Bank online. You can send them a check. You can donate on by phone, and they will see to it that the food bank of your choice gets the benefit of that donation. They have a buying program under which they can save huge amounts of money. So cash is probably the best way to support your food banks, but if you want to give food items, just remember they cannot be perishable. There's a list of our county food banks on the Food Distribution Network, Tompkins County Food Distribution Network website. You can find that easily by Googling. And then one other thing, I wanted to advise everyone that the Lansing Library, in co-sponsorship with Lansing Democratic Committee, will be presenting a program by Stephen Yale Lohr, professor of immigration practice at Cornell Law School and of counsel at Miller Mayer, on our immigration system and what the problems are and proposed fixes. That will be on Tuesday, January 22nd at 7 p.m. at the Lansing Library. They would like you to call the library and reserve a spot because they have limited space. Thank you.
Thank you, Deborah, and really, really great great work on the food bank for the workers. Thank you very much, Mike. We really appreciate that effort. It's really important. Anybody else? Dan Klein.
Thank you. I just wanted to briefly mention the forestry issue that we've been talking about. This is the plan to log 162 acres of county-owned land in Newfield. I know the public has been paying a lot of attention to it, so I just wanted to make sure everyone understood the schedule, which is that there will be a committee meeting next Thursday, January 24th, to vote on this issue, and if it passes there, then it will come to the full legislature on February 5th. This will be the first time that the legislature has debated this issue. And if the legislature passes the resolution that night to log, then the logging could start as early as next month. So I just wanted to keep everyone up to date on the time frame. Thank you.
Leslin. Yeah.
Wasn't sure if you said Leslin or thank you. Thanks, Martha. I just wanted to remind my colleagues and everyone else who's paying attention to us at this time that this weekend into Monday, the nation takes time to celebrate the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. You all are welcome. You're invited and welcome to join us on Saturday before the snow comes. It's not going to come until the night.
Okay.
Henry, for the community breakfast, our annual community breakfast that is given by the Greater Ithaca Activity Center, mainly known to folks as GIAC, at BJM Elementary School, 9 to 11:30. It is a wonderful program, and Mayor Savante Myrick is your guest speaker, and a very delicious breakfast that is reasonably priced. But the wonderful people who sit at the door, if you show up and say, I don't have any money, they'll let you in for free. So please do come out and join us for this celebration. And then that Monday, It's a day on activities instead of a day off. We encourage people to take that day to engage in conversation, in workshops, in actions that for change. So on Monday, same place, Beverly J. Martin Elementary School, with some spillover into to GIAC. There's a number of workshops to participate in. There's a luncheon to begin. I think that begins. We begin at 11. Don't quote me. Might be 11 or 11:30. But there's a luncheon, and then it's followed by a number of action-oriented workshops. So please do join us as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Leslie. Anna Kellis.
I actually wanted to just briefly thank our colleague Rich John for all of his work on the Center for History and Culture, Tonkin Center of History and Culture. There was an event last week, a sort of pre-ribbon cutting in a way. It was a galvanizing event where all of the nonprofits got up and spoke. They were given 60 seconds each to share their vision. And one of the themes that was talked about throughout is how this is actually going to also be a place for honoring our diversity. There's a very wide range of nonprofits that are represented, nonprofits focused on the environment, nonprofits focused on tourism, and nonprofits focused on human rights and diversity and inclusion in our county. So that was very inspiring. We here always hear about how this is a very stressful thing. You know, we have to continuously think about the building infrastructure. This was the first time that I got to see the beauty and the culture and the excitement. And I have to say, personally, I'm very excited about it. So thank you, Rich, for all of your hard work.
Thank you for saying so. It is very exciting.
Thanks, Anna. Leslie?
Thank you for bringing that up. Actually, I was at a meeting last night where folks were asking, how is Tommy getting in there? And I said, I don't know. I'll bring a wing. Somebody else might bring the tail. I have no idea. They actually wanted to know, is it really going to be there? They were excited about that. So I'm not sure how it works out to get Tommy in there, but that might be a good op-ed piece to share. You know, Tommy will be there, and here's how.
Rich, do you have an answer?
Yeah, the trick is having it land on the commons.
I thought, you know, one of those big cranes was going to lower it before the roof goes on. I don't know, but...
Tommy is coming. Tommy will be in the building. Yes.
That's great.
Very excited.
It's a mystery. I don't know how it's going to get in there, but it's a mystery. Martha, I actually wanted to... it's a little bit of shameless self-promotion, but at the same time, it is just a call for adult awareness and support. Yes, it's Girl Scout cookie time. But I'm bringing it up not just because Indira sells Girl Scout cookies and I have my form, but because I see the Girl Scouts who are out in our public, like I'm being serious right now, and I think of Jamie Kloss and this little girl and what happened to her, and I think of so many other little girls who disappear. And as grown-ups, we have a responsibility to not only support what they're trying to do, but try to protect these young ladies and young men when they're out in our community. And often, we don't intervene. We hear, we see, and we're not comfortable with intervening. So... you know, we have bystander intervention trainings that happen, and so I encourage people to please pay extra attention. I'm actually nervous about my daughter going and knocking on doors. Oh, yeah. You know, and wouldn't send her out there by herself by any means. But just for all of us to be extra aware and supportive of the young people in our community. That's it.
Thank you, Leslie. Dave, did you have your hand up?
Yes. Just comment on Tommy. Tommy will be there sometime in March, and the people that built it are disassembling it so they can get there. I'm not sure how it's going to get down there, probably on a trailer.
Disassembling it? Yeah. Oh, okay.
They have to take the wings and the tail off to get it in the door. So.
Well, I hope folks who are asking that question is listening. Yes, they'll disassemble Tommy.
And just a comment on the forestry thing. I spoke with the neighbors, some of the neighbors that are adjacent to that property, and they are definitely in favor of doing this. Matter of fact, one of them, her father, was one of the ones that planted the pine trees that are being removed. But nevertheless, they are totally in favor of that, and they're the ones that are most impacted by it. So I would think, you know, if it's not bothering them, it's probably not a bad thing. That's all I got.
All right. Thank you, Dave. Anyone else? I have a couple little housekeeping things, but I will make longer remarks after our presentation. I just wanted to let you know that you should roll up your sleeves on Wednesday, January 30th. It's the Tompkins County Blood Drive at the Borgwarner Room of the Library. The next drive isn't until June 24th. That's at the Health Department. So you should really help us out January 30th, Wednesday. And Michelle can help you schedule one of the time slots. You get a $5 Dunkin' e-card if you donate blood. And probably if, like me, you don't have enough iron in your blood, you might get the card anyway. But that's one thing. And then I wanted to make sure everybody knows about the retirement party for Stephen Estes. He is our Deputy Commissioner of Human Resources. On Friday, January 25th, it will be his last day with Tompkins County. That's his actual 30-year anniversary, I believe, for his of working here in Tompkins County. There's a party from 12 to 2:30. And, Jason, I don't know where. In the old jail?
I believe it. Yes, it's in the old jail, but we'll confirm.
Okay. Yep. So I hope you'll mark down Friday, January 25th, middle of the day, to stop in. And thanks, Stephen, for his service and his 30 years of helping us provide the right kind of support for our employees. So that is what I have for right now. And now I wanted to welcome and thank for coming Kathleen Joy and Eric Buck, coming down from Syracuse from the New York State Department of Transportation. And why don't you come on over to the seats in the middle, get the slides. Okay, we're going to move the screen. Welcome. We are delighted to have you here again. Thank you very much for taking the time.
Thank you for having us. When we were here the last time back at the end of the summer, we were just starting to develop the site layout. We hadn't had any of the studies done. It was really more conceptual. And at the time, there were a number of questions from the legislature, and we offered to come back once we had some information. So here we are. We've done a lot of work. We have met with some of the neighbors, listening to their comments and their concerns. What we have up on the screen is just an overview of the site that we were considering, the airport layout plan. The property that is in question, if you will, is part of the airport, and so it has to be released from airport purposes, which is why it's an FAA action. They're the actual lead agency under the environmental review process, and they are involved in this transaction as well. So the FAA needs to release the property for airport purposes, so for use for non-aviation purposes. So the first map that you see there shows the hash marks up in the corner. Well, I don't know if I can show that with a pointer there. But that's the red hash mark is the 15 acres that would be acquired. The aerial view on the left, I put a white X at the area where we were, where we're talking about. That's 15 acres there. So that's a general location. The next slide is the specific location. Again, an aerial view so you can see where some of the properties are in the context of the 15-acre site. It does jog around a little bit. And that's the site that is that we're in contract to acquire. Just to give you a brief update on the procedure so everybody knows where we are in the scheme of things, an environmental assessment has been prepared, and it is available to the public. And there's one screen at the end here that'll give you the website and the places where it's located for people to review and comment. Tomorrow night, we're having a public hearing. FAA is having a public hearing. We're hosting it. It happens to be at the town of Lansing, but the town of Lansing, it's just for the venue purposes. They're not involved in it. It's an FAA hearing, just to clarify that. Before the meeting, the hearing itself is from 4:30 to 5:30. But from 4 to 4:30, we're going to have an open house with some boards. We're going to have DOT staff members there. We're going to have some of our consultants there so we can actually engage people in conversations. They'll have the ability to provide written comment. They could provide verbal comments as well. Then we'll have the public hearing where we'll just take testimony. And then at the end, from 5:30 to 6, we'll have another opportunity for engagement. It'll be another open house. Public comment can be received, and it can be for the project, against the project, suggestions for the project, anything in relation to the project and the environmental assessment, up until February 2nd. And then DOT will accumulate those comments, work with FAA, get them addressed, and then move forward or otherwise. The project also requires the sewer district boundary lines to be changed. There'll be water and sewer hookups that need to be addressed. We're anticipating having solar panels on one of the buildings, geothermal. Our intent is to have geothermal there, so there'll be some additional permitting as well. So there's a lot of different steps to the process, but again, we wanted to come back and just give you a brief overview of where we are to date. This is the proposed site layout. It's changed a number of times. This is what is being presented in that environmental assessment. And I'm going to turn it over to Eric so that he can describe the operation and what those various buildings are and what they do.
So the main building towards the south of the property, labeled sub-residency building, that's where the offices will be, the mechanics bays, and the truck bays. There's and a wash bay. The salt barn is over to the left of the picture.
Excuse me, is there a pointer? Can you use the cursor? Kathy, you know. Oh, it's okay. Fine.
That's right. There we go.
All right, if that's all right, don't.
Well, so the small square building with the, it looks like two white rectangles. That's actually the salt barn.
There we go.
That's approximately 60 feet by 100 feet. There is a 25-foot lean-to on the side of it. It's a 4,000. It's a 4,000-ton salt barn, and this building up here is cold storage. This building up here is cold storage. Thank you. 5,000 square feet, 50 by 100. We'll put a tractor trailer if needed, just gets anything that we need out of the weather under cover. And this over here is a hopper storage. It's more like a lean-to where we hang the hoppers from the plow trucks during the summer when we're not using them. We have the regular boxes on the trucks. This is the fuel island. Not a gas station. This is a single diesel tank. There's no gas, solely diesel, two pumps so that it can fuel trucks on either side of it. Employee parking, visitor parking, handicap parking, stormwater retention, and yeah, if you have any questions about what you see up there, that's the gist of.
Can you point out the residential homes?
Stormwater stuff up here. What?
Can you point out the residential homes where they're located in comparison to all?
Well, this is the one that has the. That's what?
That's 8 Hillcrest.
8 Hillcrest, 16 Hillcrest, and there's a property right about here that belongs to the Reeds. It's off this picture, but that's a correct. It's over here, right about here, correct?
Yes, thank you.
What is the turquoise and the thing with the U-shaped thing?
Looks like a pool.
Yeah, those this here? Storage. Stormwater management.
No, up on the up, right next to Warren Road.
Oh, this is a self storage. That's not on our property, but there's a self storage. I don't know how many units.
Okay, and your the property that we're talking about
the
is
red
the,
line here
the red outline.
Line.
Okay.
Can you also show where the trucks would come in and out the plows?
Deborah.
Thank you. I was curious, you mentioned vehicle bays in that main sub-residency building. In which direction do they open, south or north?
Both. We have a drive-through policy in Region 3. Region 3 is all of six counties, including Cortland Tompkins. So we make every effort to not back up our vehicles for safety. And so the vehicles would come in and pull through.
Dan?
So one or more of the residents asked about the site to the south of there, if that was investigated. Can you just say a little bit about any attempts that were made to look at that site?
I really can't. I mean, I'm not the one that would know that answer.
Jonathan?
We've expressed that.
So,
forwarded on that concern.
I mean, I can generally answer. I mean, it goes off the map. You have to understand that the road there that's on that doesn't currently exist.
Eric, could you go back one slide? I think
So a little south of where that is Cherry Road. The runway protection zone, if you look at it kind of in the at the bottom right-hand corner, makes like a triangle. And then north of that is like a stream and then a stream buffer moving towards that way. So a lot of the area to the south is runway protection zone, and then north of the runway protection zone, there's stream and stream buffer. As you get to what would be, my left here, you get onto Cherry Road, and there's a lot of residences on Cherry Road that you want to stay away from. Moving south and over to the what is west, but to the left is wetland, a little further north. But there's really not a lot of room to play there. And of course, as you move west, you're moving further from Warren Road. Meaning, of course, that you have to have further development and further disturbance of the area to get there.
Couldn't hear the last thing you said.
Further disturbance of the environment to get there. The more west you move, because the closer you are to Warren Road, obviously the less impact you have in terms of development and driving back and forth as well.
Okay. Shauna?
Hi there. I know that legally you are... you have to do the public hearing tomorrow. However, I just wanted to know, are you willing to make changes based on resident feedback at this point?
That is part of the environmental assessment. We have to address some of those comments. And So, yes, we would encourage people if they have comments or concerns, positive and negative, too, by the way. It's not just the negative comments that we would receive. And we have to address those. The answers, they may not be acceptable to some of the owners, but we do have to answer some of the questions, clarify some of the issues, maybe some of the misinformation that's out there. But I think there is room, and we've had some of those conversations already.
Thank you.
Anna?
Just so we know technically what's possible, given your evaluation of some of the stuff that Jonathan has pointed out and then what the needs are for the airport, is it technically possible to move this slightly west and south away from those houses and just create a longer road entrance? Or is there stuff that that exists there that keeps it limited to this space? I'm just trying to understand what's...
Right. Given the site that was available, we even increased that from 10 acres to 15 acres in order to draw the facility further west and south. So you'll see in that the green space here is all open space, and we've shifted the facility farther to the west and south, and we've reconfigured this based on some of the input that we have received from the neighbors and from others. Looking south in some of the other spots, logistically, it would be a challenge. So just for example, you know, if the site were available for purchase that cut off this and had, you know, moved it around a little bit, then the county would end up having, I guess, dead space up there, if you will. So when in 2016, when the feasibility study, the county did the feasibility study, and that was available to the public, I think, in 2017, it kind of laid out where the different buildings might be, some of the constraints with the runway protection zone, some of the wetlands, and the space here that we're looking at has wet land, but there are no designated wetlands there. There are some further to the north and west, and I think there is that stream buffer zone that is to the south. So really, when you start to look at some of the environmental constraints,
it's tight.
It's tight, if not buildable at all.
Can I ask one small follow-up? In that space that you've pulled that off of, the 5 acres, it's an open space. Is it? It doesn't look wooded. I can't tell from this. Is it possible then to populate that with trees and create as much visual buffer as possible?
Yes, and that's what you'll see here is a visual buffer with the berm. One of the comments that you can't see that there, but it says 5 feet. There had been a suggestion to increase that to create a further buffer. So that's a possibility. We may be able to do something up here to create some other visual barriers too. So in response to one of the other legislative questions, those kinds of things, we can look at that. We did take the logo. We agreed to take that off the building, so that's a possibility too. So there is some room there to do some things to avoid any of the impacts that there might be.
Anyone else? Where's the solar going to go?
It's going to go on the
southern facing.
Yeah, it's on the other side.
On the southern facing roofs. Both the salt barn and the main building.
Yeah, so this is the main building here. This is a rendering of what it's going to look like. This is the back of the building where the trucks, as Eric said, would come in and pull in that way. This is just a typical, it's an example of what a storage barn would look like. It's not one of the dome shape. It looks more like a barn. And this is the information that I wanted to share with everyone. The document, the environmental assessment, is available now. There's one at the Lansing Town Hall. Again, this is just for venue purposes, for convenience. Lansing Town Hall, the library, and at the airport in the administrative offices. This long link, because we weren't able to put it on our actual website, but that if you want to get it online, that's where you get it.
So I should also say, I just checked, if you go to the Lansing Town website, it's on there.
Oh, very good. Okay,
and
good.
I actually just got it from there. So.
That helps. Comments are submitted by February 2nd to the project director, Mike Washburn. There's his address and email address. We'll have boxes available tomorrow. People can put comments in. They can email me if you need to, or any way that you want to get a comment to us by the second, we'll have that incorporated into the document.
So, Henry.
What are the changes, except for the logo, have you made based on conversations that you've had with the neighbors yet?
We relocated the location and orientation of both the salt dome and the salt barn and the main facility.
Okay.
Sorry, what? The berm was in there from the start.
Yeah,
and we're going to look at berm, at changing the berm. It was brought to my attention yesterday that when we had spoke earlier, we had said that there was an 8-foot berm. And I looked at the contours today. On the south side, the berm is 8 feet. It's 8 feet above the blacktop. But I need to verify that it's going to be 8 feet from the north side, which would be the side that affects the closest neighbors.
You mean it might be more or less?
I'm sorry, what?
You need to verify that the other side might be more or less than 8 feet from the ground level.
I want to verify that it is 8 feet.
Okay. And then other changes, you're talking about adding more landscaping?
That's already been done. Okay. I mean, the landscaping that's been done was just the number of trees that are going to be planted on that berm and in that area. One of the comments from, I don't know if it was OBS, different people had a chance to comment on the plans, and one of the comments from their environmental people was, this is a ridiculous number of trees should be reduced. And we explained why there was a large number of trees and shrubs.
Yeah. Just to give you an example, we had a presentation last night with the Lansing Planning Board, because they, too, wanted to know what was going on. And one of the town board members had raised a point about the pedestrian and bicycle use on Warren Road. And, it's something that we should consider. And, maybe because we have the driveway that comes out, maybe there's something that we can do to make sure that the drivers can have a good sight distance there.
Those bikers.
Yeah. And so, it's just something. Those are the types of public comments that we would appreciate receiving, because it may not be something that's in the document that needs to be addressed. Maybe there's some inconsistency in the document or some misinformation or something that needs to be clarified further, like the 30 cars in and out, is it per hour? Is it per shift change? Those are the kinds of things that we need to address, particularly if there's a question or a clarification that needs to be done. If there's something that is called attention to, like with the neighbors, we need to consider all of those things. And so we will. And that's part of the environmental assessment process. That's why they give you 30 days to put the comments together.
Amanda?
Yeah, thanks so much for being here. So what I'm hearing from the neighbors and the residents is that this is really going to affect their lives. And what I'm hearing from you guys is that pretty much this is, like, the location is set. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So the only real changes that could be made would be some of those smaller things, like a bike, bike access or awareness, and maybe add some more trees. I'm just trying to be clear so folks know that, like...
There won't be bike access.
Well, not... I mean, what we were just talking about the road, I think they really want it to be different, and I don't blame them, and I agree. But what I'm hearing is that it's not going to be different.
Well, this is the proposal that's...
But
that has been advanced.
The space.
This space, this 15 acres. Right.
Thanks.
Could you clarify? You said you said misinformation. Is there anything else that you know, in particular? I mean, how many trucks per hour will it be during a snow? I mean, is it just during a snowstorm? What's the use going to be like?
The number of trucks will be the most during a snowstorm. The comment that was made referred to the environmental assessment, where it says the peak usage would be 30 trucks in an hour, and it was misspoken that it would be 30 trucks an hour. And it doesn't say 30 trucks, it says 30 vehicles. I have to find it here. But it's really what it's talking about is at the shift change, the peak hour would be at midnight and at noon. When, if it's snowing out, all the trucks are out, they come in, there's a shift change, 10 new vehicles come in, bringing new operators, 10 operators leave to go home, and then the operators that just came in would head out with those trucks. After that, it's much more random. All beats are around 2 hours, so once they head out loaded with salt, it takes them about 2 hours to get back. But none of the beats are exactly the same length. None of them take exactly the same time. So once, if we're on continuous snow and ice, trucks do come in and out during snow events. But when it's not snowing, there's much less activity. You know, trucks will go out, but if they're out patching potholes, they're out for several hours, or fixing guide rail or ditching. You know, that's not an in and out. There's nothing to come back to the shop to get loaded for. We take enough fuel. You know, they don't come back for lunch, that kind of thing. It's not like a constant in and out. And it's almost never 30 trucks in an hour. It's never 30 trucks in an hour. Maybe 30 vehicles. Passenger vehicles bringing people in, vehicles taking people home, and then, you know, when a shift leaves, there's 10 trucks leave at the same time, or roughly the same time.
10 trucks.
Yes.
So, like, how many trucks are stored in the area with the bays?
10.
10. That's 10 trucks will live at this facility.
10, sometimes 11 to have a spare truck. When one goes down, we have 10 beats. A beat is a route. Mm-hmm. So there's 10 routes, 10 trucks, 10 drivers, 11 if I can get 11. But, sometimes there's a spare truck for, you know, when a truck goes down.
And in the summer, they, as you said, patch potholes and do road maintenance?
The crews do a lot of work. The main focus in Tompkins County is drainage. Ditching, cleaning, ravines and stuff, keeping the drainage alongside the roadway clean. We mow, we fix guide rail, pick up dead animals off the road.
Thank you.
There's a lot of things that they're doing. We fix signs, trim trees.
So we started talking to DOT 25 years ago about moving from the waterfront. Kathleen, or either of you, do you have any kind of summary of kind of why it's taken? Because at that time, DOT agreed that they ought to leave. So it wasn't that DOT didn't want to leave. Why didn't they?
Well, I can't speak to why they didn't, but I think it was agreed that the current site was not appropriate for the DOT facility. And I don't know if it was 25 years ago or so. I know I inherited a whole bunch of old ancient files to go through. But I know that about 15 years ago, there had been some conversations with the county, with the city, about an appropriate place to go. There had been some agreements. I think those agreements fell through. And then by 2015, the conversation got started again. I joined the team in 2016, and there had already been the original memorandum of understanding. That's, those circumstances changed, and that was set aside. We looked at a site down in the city. We looked at a couple of other locations. And then when the county had put their feasibility study together, again, I was not a party to that, but I'm not sure who approached whom to say there may be some land available there at the airport. And that's where we picked up and started fine-tuning where that might be, what our needs were. You know, as Eric was saying, you know, with the, we're not for 10 trucks and access to the state highways and all the other features that would be necessary for a maintenance facility like DOT's. And this is what we had settled on, and that's what we had before you back in August, I guess it was.
Well, I have paperwork that goes back 25 years. So that's how long DOT's been looking for a location. Anna?
This is actually a question for Mike Hall. This area has been zoned industrial, right, forever? Commercial. So this was there, this was always thought of as a potential for development of some sort and consolidation, right?
Mike, can you go to the microphone?
The airport land that's outside the fence is intended to be developed to support the airport in a, you know, a very strategic sense, and this was zoned commercial to that end, which is why there was a study done about how this land might develop going forward.
Rich?
Thank you. I'm just curious if you looked at a design where you took the sub-residency building and rotated it 90 degrees parallel to the stormwater management and put the car parking in its place to the north in order to move the main building, because that sounds like that's the noisy building, as far away as possible from Hillcrest. Is there a reason?
The first rendering had it in a more north-south direction. It was not pushed to the south, as you're talking. But the first orientation had it basically rotated on the east end.
Okay.
And it was maybe 100 feet closer to the closest residence.
I guess my question is, why put the car parking at the south end? Could you put that north of the sub-residency building to create more separation between the trucks and Hillcrest?
Possibly. You know, when you turn in off the road, you got to consider the turning radius there. You know, these are pretty good-sized trucks. They're dump trucks. They're not tractor-trailers typically, but the tractor-trailers bring in the salt quite often. Not always tractor-trailer, but the traffic group looked at vehicle movement and...
But that's
why.
Yeah, but we can ask the designers if, and I think what I'm hearing is...
To put parking up there? Well, the parking wouldn't go up there because it's not just for employees. We wouldn't want visitors that come to the site to drive through the whole site to be able to park.
Right, I was thinking, say, along where the diesel fuel tanks are, if you did it in a north-south orientation along that edge, and then...
The parking?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where I had it when I drew it the first time.
I don't know. Well, thank you.
Jonathan, did you have your hand up or
no.
Want to add anything? Okay. Anything else from anybody? Well, thank you so very much. We really appreciate your time and your attention to detail and listening to the residents. And good luck tomorrow. I hope everybody has the FaceTime and airtime that they need. We really appreciate you coming. Thanks. right. Thank you, everybody. I would like to let folks know if anybody's not interested in hearing the longest chair's report I'm going to make for the year, you might want to go, except for the people around the table here. Sorry. No, I'm about to make a report that is a little bit longer than usual. So I just wanted to start off 2019 with a few words about what we're doing this year, not just kind of hand out our committee list, but give us some time to think about a few bigger issues. Thank you so very much for the privilege of serving as your chair for 2019. I'm grateful for your confidence and for the opportunity to continue on a lot of things that we've set into motion. And I want to thank Shauna Black for her interest in serving as vice chair. She brings so much to the table, and I look forward to working in partnership with Shauna. I'd also like to recognize Anna Kellis, our 2018 vice chair, for her incredible energy and intelligence and service to our county. Thank you, Anna. will be a year for building. Building on the foundations that we set in 2018, building toward goals that we should set for the next 3 years, and probably building up, literally. First, building on the work of our staff. Before I launch into a discussion of our goals for the year and our committee appointments, I want to say a few words about our staff. Here's where building on really means something to me, and I hope to each of you. As legislators, we come into these jobs with a variety of skills and experience. As any honest elected official will admit, we don't necessarily have any particular skills for our jobs, aside from whatever it takes to get one more than 50% of the votes. We get on-the-job training if we're smart enough to look for it. On the other hand, the people who work for Tompkins County are carefully selected for the exact positions they hold and then coached and trained to continue to improve. Whatever their job, they're professionals, constantly looking for better ways to do things, other models to learn from, and ways to build on each other's work. Whatever we might accomplish as legislators is built on the work of our staff. It may sound obvious, but we couldn't do anything without them. The work we do together is a team sport, and we legislators owe a debt of gratitude to the people who serve our community every day. In my humble opinion, we don't thank them enough, so I'll ask you to please join me in recognizing the hard work of the dedicated employees of Tompkins County. Thank you all. So where are we now and where are we going? 25% of our term is completed. What will we have to show for the next 75%? A year ago, half of us had served only 2 years or 2 weeks on this body, and our county's administrator wasn't even in the room. We didn't know who the deputy administrator, what the deputy administrator positions would look like or who they'd be, and we had no idea where they'd sit once we hired them. A year ago, we had just lost our jail variances. We worried that our board-out costs would balloon, and we didn't even know who would be running for sheriff. At the state level, the whole legislature and the governor were entering an election year. And some of us a year ago couldn't have even picked Cynthia Nixon out of a lineup. So a lot of things changed in the last year, and nobody would know what the federal midterms would bring. As of today, some things have shaken out, some things have settled down, some things are more shaken up, perhaps, but for us, now I believe it's time for us to build. It's time to build on the relationships we've started with New York State. We've become really good at punching above our weight. For example, the governor heard Amanda's footsteps coming, and now he's proposing a statewide plastic bag ban. thanks to our advocacy with the state, we're getting closer to getting a third county judge than we've ever been. The Alcohol and Drug Council is better positioned to receive state support for a full detox center as they work to move into their new space on North Trip Hammer Road. And the airport project is fully underway. We will build on these and other successes when a number of us go to NYSAC at the end of the month and meet with members of the new New York State Senate. We will leave no stone unturned. As evidence, Deborah, Annie, and I went to the White House in August and made contacts. No stone, absolutely. And made contacts to support our FAA proposal for the airport. In the congressional meetings I had in Washington last week, I carried the message about our airport to 7 congressional offices and to both of our senators. Did you know that 5 members of the New York State delegation are committee chairs in Congress this session, including Representative Nita Lowey as the all-important chair of appropriations? That's a lot of juice coming out of New York, and of course would benefit from Senator Schumer's national leadership position. We can touch those people. We can touch those people, and I started that on Friday. These contacts are important relationships to build on. For example, as we look for potential funding for a new TCAT facility, lots of things that can matter here. This year we'll be all about building in the literal sense, too. Coming back from the cuts of the Great Recession, we have a staff that's now outgrown its knickers. The facility... Knickers, is that like an old-fashioned word?
You're dating yourself.
Yeah, that's not the only dated thing in here, so it's all right. The Facilities and Infrastructure Committee will be busy this year, overseeing the renovations in the old jail, evaluating the Tioga Street property, and overseeing that project if it moves forward. Public Safety will be bringing us to a decision about the jail and about a possible shared law enforcement facility with the City of Ithaca. And we will be supporting more housing construction as well, hoping to create a more sustainable and equitable community for all who want to live here. Building on last year's committee work, it seems that 2018 was a year for learning, with a lot of informational presentations in our committees. Building on that foundation, let's make 2019 a year for setting clear, achievable goals and keeping our focus there. So I'm asking that each committee establish 3 specific goals for the year. Okay, for tops 5, okay? But really, not a laundry list of everything you're going to talk about. 3 specific top priorities for your time and your attention. The month of March is a reasonable deadline to agree on those goals so that the remaining 3 quarters of the year can be focused on that work. I will convene a meeting of the committee chairs and vice chairs as soon as we can schedule one. I hope we can discuss what this goal setting means, how to go about it, as well as committee process issues and the optimal roles of committee members and staff. So stay tuned for that doodle poll coming soon. As for committee schedules, Kathy has drafted a preliminary committee schedule. That is in your red folders, and I believe the committee responsibilities are as well. Is that in the folders? Okay. At the end of our meeting, I'll ask that you get together in your committees, look at that schedule, and put your heads together, see if those those monthly times work for all of you. So thanks very much. So with that, I'm going to make the following appointments for 2019, effective February 1st. The committees that have late January meetings already scheduled will convene with their 2018 membership. First, Budget, Capital, and Personnel. Mike Lynn will chair again. Leslie McBean Claiborne will be vice chair again. And the committee will be filled out with Glenn Morey, Mike Sigler, and Amanda Champion. Once again, this committee should prioritize work to improve the diversity and inclusion among our workforce. The 2018 climate survey will be a strong tool to move forward on those issues. Dave McKenna will be chair again of Facilities and Infrastructure, ably supported with Annie Corman as vice chair. Glenn Morey, Mike Lane, and Dan Klein will fill out the rest of that committee. And as I've already mentioned, F and I will have a lot of exciting projects on its plate this year. For government operations, Mike Lane will become chair. Amanda is vice chair. Amanda Champion, Rich John, Deborah Dawson, and Dan Klein are the other committee members. Mike's long experience on the legislature will guide the review of our many administrative policies that Dan and the committee worked on last year. So thanks for taking that on, Mike. Health and Human Services, I think, is almost exactly the same as last year. Shauna Black will be chair. Dan Klein will be vice chair of HHS this year. The other members are Leslie Bean Claiborne, Anna Kellis, and Henry Granison. A key issue for HHS this year should be tackling the issue of homelessness, in particular, how we provide shelter through our new contract with St. John's and all that might mean. We've got a new committee called Housing and Economic Development, sort of reformed committee. Anna Kellis will chair, Deborah Dawson vice chair, Mike Sigler, Annie Corman, and Henry Granison are the other members. Notice I'm not on it. I'm not on the Housing Committee. One of the main concerns Shauna and I heard in our meetings with all of you was the relatively light workload of the Housing Committee in 2018 and the heavier load of PDEC. So this year we're trying a rebalancing. Economic development programs, TCAD, Workforce, the Chamber, Downtown Ithaca Alliance, and Tourism will move to this new Housing and Economic Development Committee. So the Planning Committee becomes the Planning, Energy, and Environmental Quality Committee, which we'll call PEAK, a name that we're recycling from a few years back. Deborah Dawson will chair, Anna Kellis vice chair. The other members are Annie Corman, Amanda Champion, and Dave McKenna. So we hope the PEAK will not feel as jammed this year as last year. The two committees, HED and PEAK, will meet during the same week at the request of staff, and they asked for this so it would facilitate managing, you know, their planning and managing of their workload. And Deborah and Anna are already coordinating closely for their joint their joint work. Public Safety Committee will be chaired again by Rich John with Henry Granison as vice chair. This is a committee that's exactly the same, right?
Yes.
Thank you. And with Anna Kellis, Dave McKenna, and Shauna Black filling out the committee. Getting to know our new sheriff and undersheriff. I note that Sheriff Osborne was here before, so glad that he's going to show up. Getting to know Derek and Jen Olin, our new undersheriff. Transition in DOER, the Department of Emergency Response, and recommendations to the full legislature on our jail and road patrol facilities are among public safety's big tasks for the year. Workforce Diversity Inclusion Committee to again be chaired by Leslie McBean Claiborne, with Annie Corman, Anna Kellis, and Henry Granison also on that committee. Following up on the results of the climate survey is just one of the many goals that Leslie and WDIC will have in 2019. The one special committee I'm not appointing any other special committees, and I wanted to mention that for transportation, I think that it's great that the Transportation Committee has moved the conversation about Route 13 to action. And the next steps are in the capable hands of the Planning and Sustainability Department. Mike Lane and Deborah Dawson will be on the steering committee for that project with other stakeholders. So that's the next step in developing an RFP and overseeing a project like that. Staff convenes a steering committee, and Deborah and Mike will be on it. The remaining work will go to F&I. There's some additional appointments, chair's appointments for 2019 that are made annually. To the Tompkins County Area Development Board of Directors, myself, Martha Robertson, and Anna Kellis as chair of HED. The Chamber of Commerce, Martha Robertson, the legislature chair, has a designated seat, and Shauna Black is the alternate. To the Cooperative Extension Service, the Board of Cooperative Extension, Dave McKenna, Amanda Champion. The Local Advisory Board on Assessment Review is one of these we used to always appoint, all of us too. This year, GO led a reevaluation of that, the need for those boards. So I will ask that GEO take a look at it in, say, July to determine if we think those boards should come back in 2020. But for this year, we're not appointing those boards. To the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Leslie McBean Claiborne is chair. Rich John, chair of the Ethics Advisory Board. to the Ithaca Metropolitan Planning Organization, the ITC-ETC Policy Committee, Mike Lane, to the Municipal Electric and Gas Alliance, Heather McDaniel as our representative, our liaison to the Tompkins Center for History and Culture, Rich John, and our delegate to the Cougar Lake Watershed Intermunicipal Organization, Deborah Dawson, and Annie Cortman as the alternate. We have special negotiating committees to conduct collective bargaining negotiations with our employee organizations. The CSEA Blue Collar has agreed to a 6-year contract, and we'll vote on that tonight. For all the other bargaining units, for all the committees, Jason Molino and Amy Guerrero are hereby appointed. And for CSEA White Collar, Glenn Morey and Shauna Black. For the Corrections Union, Rich John, Ann Corman, Derek Osborne, and Jennifer Olin. And for Road Patrol and Civil Division, Mike Lane, Henry Granison, Derek Osborne, and Jennifer Olin. I'm really glad that Shauna, Henry, and Annie agreed to join those negotiating units. This is a particular skill set, and I think it's really important to develop our bench, so to speak, on those tasks. The appointments to the IDA will go to PDEC on January 24th. They go through resolution, as does the TCOG resolution that goes through GO tomorrow morning. Okay. For TCOG, the chair of the legislature, I appoint myself for the delegate to TCOG, and Shauna Black will be the alternate. For the IDA, the appointments are Rich John, chair, myself as vice chair, Leslie McBean, Claire Bourne, Mike Sigler, Jennifer Tavares, Laura Lewis, and John Guttridge. And we've already appointed Deborah Dawson to the TCAD board, and she has begun that service already. So thank you all for taking on those responsibilities.
Martha, will Deborah continue as the alternate on the ITC-TC?
Deborah, will you continue as the alternate? I didn't have that one down here.
I guess so.
Okay, there we go. You bet. So as we sit here tonight, the country is in unprecedented chaos. It's kind of calm and, you know, normal here. But the federal government is in the longest shutdown in history on its 25th day today. Polarization seems worse than ever. Even more intractable than during the Vietnam War protests, for those of us old enough to remember. I could go on, but I'll spare us all. But at least in our little corner of the country, we don't have to contribute to that. We each have a choice. Will this year of building, will this include building each other up? Let's remember that the foundations of trust and respect that have made this an exceptional organization have taken years to build. Let's listen to each other and to our other partners in this work. Particular votes come and go. I've taken enough votes during my 17 years here to know that what lasts are not the votes won or lost, but the relationships I've been privileged to build. So let's commit to truly working together this year. We work for the people, and we do our best work when we listen and learn. Let's make the most of the next 75%. Thank you. Thank you very much. You'll have copies of this. I think Kathy's made some copies. We'll have those out for you later. Report from the county administrator, Jason Milley.
Thank you, Martha. So tonight I was asked to give a little bit of a brief on the federal government shutdown and if that has impacted any of our departments, any services, and what we know today. So what I'm going to share with you is not necessarily answers, but and there are a lot of unknowns that are going to change probably from week to week just because of the unprecedented nature of this, if this continues beyond tonight and into the days and weeks in the future. So what I know today, or what we know today, came from two specific asks of department heads. About 2 weeks ago, I asked all department heads to give me any feedback. At that point in time, there was really nothing to report. No services had been impacted, and just for the record, no services are impacted as of right now. And then again yesterday, I sent out a request to all department heads again to refresh that. What are you hearing? What do we know of today? There is probably a handful of departments that would be impacted by federal funds one way or another. It's not everyone, just so we all understand that. It's probably a smaller portion of departments than a larger. From that response, I just wanted to share a little bit of information. Again, this isn't to say that tomorrow morning things could change, direction could change, or we don't really have a lot of direction about what happens after this point. From the Health Department, Frank Krupa advised that the WIC program is funded till the end of February. Again, don't know what that means as to what happens after that point if we're still in shutdown, but right now WIC is funded to the end of February. We'll continue to provide services and process requests and so on and so forth as they are now. Department of Social Services, USDA, is going to accelerate the February disbursement of SNAP benefits to anyone with an open case. They're continuing to accept cases. They're continuing to process benefits for February. They've communicated to all of their caseworkers to communicate to clients that they're aware of the circumstances. They're there to answer any questions they can. They're going to continue to receive benefits for February, continue to work with clients on budgeting so that they account for that, and that there is access to food banks if needed to go beyond that date, and if there's any additional needs to continue to communicate with their DSS representatives so that they can help navigate or mitigate any challenges and help bring some solutions. Again, what happens after February, I can't explain that or speak to that, but it's funded through February in terms of benefits. Outside of that, there really wasn't much to report, really anything to report. Transportation, Highway Department really isn't going to be impacted. The Federal Transit Administration is affected. To what extent, we're not really sure yet. I think two things came out of this. While there are federal grants that both come from FTA as well as FAA, there's speculation that grant announcements could be postponed, but we don't have any confirmation of that, primarily because no one's working to answer the question. That's a possibility, and there may be some TCAT funds that could be impacted, but again, nothing we've received on that in terms of operational reimbursement. As of right now, those are the only things I have to report on from the department heads and staff. Everything else, a lot of operational funds have already been committed for the year, so they wouldn't be impacted, but the WIC and SNAP benefits are the only two right now that seem to be on the radar if the shutdown continues in the weeks ahead. Take any questions?
Sure. Anna?
Just one small one with respect to the WIC and SNAP.
Mm-hmm.
One of the concerns that has been raised is that if we give those benefits, say, for February early, that people may use them up completely before
yep.
they get through February.
Right.
Is there a plan in place to add case management and outreach to help people navigate so that doesn't happen and we do some preemptive work?
Budgeting has been part of the discussion they've had with their clients about making sure they budget properly, not to utilize funds in advance of it. It's just working with them to try to budget properly. But that communication has been out there. The same, Kit mentioned that to me, as one of the concerns that's come out of this. So they're just trying to communicate with their clients to help them manage their expenses.
And if people have questions, the best place?
Call their, if they have a case, they have a caseworker or case manager, call them, communicate their concerns. The Commissioner of Social Services issued some statements, some guiding principles for staff, and the supervisors are reinforcing that with the folks on the ground that are interacting with clients on a regular basis. So if there's questions, by all means, ask.
Okay, and as far as information that we send out, I think it's best if we have one consistent message. So that should come from you?
Absolutely. If there's a specific question you're getting from constituents, please, let me know as well. So you're probably not the only legislator that may be getting those questions. So we can kind of get a little bit of clearinghouse of the questions, and if I need to, I can regularly update the legislature. Hey, these are three common questions we've had. Here's three responses we've had. due to the, it's an oddness in the nature of the event, I suspect, you know, we're going to be getting communications more frequently as to what we do or what we can do if this continues beyond, you know, beyond the next few days. So it's kind of an ever-changing environment event.
I'll note that in the I was interested in the fact that FAA, I guess, is holding a hearing. So they're working.
Yeah. One thing that is
somebody is
a little confusing as to what's essential personnel, and I don't know that anybody in the federal government can answer that either. So you've heard the experience just a little bit when you went down to D.C. is there isn't really clarity as to who's working, who isn't. Some folks in certain departments and bureaus are working, some aren't, which is partly why highways haven't been affected, because that's considered an essential service.
Well, three-quarters of the appropriations bills had actually been passed, or appropriations bills for three-quarters of the federal employees. So that's why they call it a partial shutdown. But it's also a little weird, like at this conference where I was speaking, one of the speakers, most of the federal agency speakers couldn't show up, but one of them came from Highway, and the first question was, why are you here? And she, her division was funded by the gas tax.
Yes.
But she, I certainly asked her about FAA, and she said she thought that the people who are reviewing grants like ours were probably not working. They weren't funded by the gas tax, and they weren't considered essential. So I think delay in our in decisions on the airport grant is probably for sure.
Could be. So that's what I know today. As things change, I'll be sure to send out those updates. And like I said, if there are questions, please, you know, feel free to contact me, call me, shoot me an email so I can get some answers. And you're probably not the only one that has that question, which is important as well.
Okay. Anything else for Jason? Did you have any other topics?
You know, I didn't. I didn't have any other topics other than I will say, unless it's not here, that last year at the MLK breakfast, there was also a snowstorm. And the only reason I know that is because that's the day I moved into the apartment, because I couldn't go to the breakfast because it took me forever to get here in the snowstorm. But,
perfect.
Other time, other years, too.
So anyways, that's all.
January, you know. I think we should take a recess now. We'll come back to Jonathan's report and the rest of our business. So let's do a 10-minute recess. Thanks. Folks, can we come back? Like to call us back to order. Dave, would you mind? I guess leave Mike alone with the report. It's okay. All right, we're back in session. Jonathan Wood, County Attorney's report.
Well, I was going to say no report, but I was thinking of the chair's talk where she talked about where we were in the last year on January meeting, and I was acting county administrator, and I was acting director of human rights. So this year is already way better. And that's my report.
Excellent. Thank you, Jonathan. It's true. It was a different January. Where's Jason? Okay. Rick Snyder, finance director.
Well, last year I was acting as a finance director. This year I'm acting as a finance director. My report tonight, although we don't have the sales tax figures for you, I did want to give you a brief update on the Deputy Director of Finance search. We've completed all the phone interviews. The last one was just last night. So we're down to that process. Three out of the five candidates have been selected for live interviews and will commence into that process within the next week or so. So we're still on track, and hopefully we'll bring those to culmination by the end of January, getting all the live interviews done. And I'm very happy with the candidates that we have at this point. Each one brings different strengths and weaknesses, different experiences, and different approaches. But I think that we have a good selection at this point, and I'm looking forward to launching into those live interviews. And my final remarks tonight are on the Moody's rating review. And as you know, in October, we spent a lot of time putting a vast amount of information and statistical data together for our official statement. We do that in October because that's right after those bond resolutions are passed, most of them anyway, and we start working on all the statistical gathering during October. There's a small break over the holidays, and then we come back in January and we revisit some of those numbers. We refine them a little bit, we update them, and that work was done in the first week or two of January. We just finished our final list of questions that Moody's asked for just a few days ago. I think they asked us on Friday, so we did that last list, which was only six or eight questions this year, that are sent to them, and we give that information to them right before our Moody's conference call, which is for the rating tomorrow. Jason and I get to sit down at 12 o'clock for that Moody's review. Probably a fairly short call compared to some years. Some I can remember a lot of times in the past with Joe Mariana, the previous county administrator, that there would be a pretty exhaustive presentation made to them. Now it's shifted quite a bit. We give them a lot more information and have a lot more going back and forth with Moody's than, say, 2 or 3 years ago. So they have almost all the information up front before we even have that phone conference. I believe, Jason, you sat in on it last year with the, the phone conference. It really didn't go that long.
No, I mean, it's a standard Moody's review in this case, you know, particularly when you're bonding or borrowing, issuing bonds or issuing bonds every year. They're going to want to do a review, so it's a pretty standard. Not a lot has changed. In fact, things have improved in terms of the economic factors in the organization. There's no reason to believe that it wouldn't be a positive review, but they ask a lot of the similar questions from municipality to municipality. Yeah, no, I don't expect it to be very long.
So we're looking forward to that, and 3 or 4 days after that, they'll be giving us our bond rating. That will be the last piece that goes into the official statement. And the bond sale is going to be held on January 31st. I want to thank the department heads and those who, at the last minute, were able to contribute and send me updated information within the last 3 or 4 work days. They always help out when we come down to the wire by getting us the statistics and the changes and the revisions that we need. So I just thought I should alert you that probably next time that we meet, we'll be able to talk to you a little bit more about our Moody's rating. And that's all I have for this evening, unless you have some questions.
Any questions for Rick? Yes, Sean.
I heard in today's speech from Cuomo that they are going to allow the casinos in New York, perhaps, to start doing sports betting. Is that something that you would foresee that could contribute to the amount of gambling money that we receive here? Casino money, not gambling money.
I mean, right now the non-state casinos have that ability, so I would imagine it's a competitive disadvantage if they don't, which I think we expected that type of sports gambling to take place. It may have some impact. It's hard to say what it's You know, it's hard to say until you have a few years as to what percentage of their total revenue is attributed to it, but I would imagine that without it, they would be at a disadvantage to the non-state-owned casinos. There's not state-licensed casinos.
And we have not received our final quarter distribution for the regular Del Lago and Tioga Downs gaming revenues. That we should receive that money for the fourth quarter on around the 25th of this month. So, again, I should be able to report that to you at our first meeting in February.
Thank you very much, Rick. Anything else? All right. Thank you. Do we have any resolutions to be added to or withdrawn from the agenda? Mike Lane.
I'd like to add Resolution E, legislative approval of the tentative agreement between Tompkins County and the Civil Service Employees Association, Inc., Local 1000, AFSCME, AFL-CIO, Tompkins County, Local 855, Tompkins County Blue Collar Unit.
Second by Rich. And all in favor of adding this to the agenda, please raise your hands. Any opposed? Thank you. That is added. Is that that's a budget item, Budget Committee?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Anything else? We just have a few on the consent agenda, and we roll through.
Yeah.
Before we get to the consent agenda, I know I had a question asked to me on Resolution B. I'd just like to try to answer that so we could keep it on consent agenda.
Sure.
Just to clarify the language of the resolution, it's my understanding insurance money has been received, and the point of the resolution is to put that back into the budget for the Sheriff's Department to pay for the...
Okay. Thanks very much, Rich. All right. So let me know if you have anything to pull off. Resolution A, budget adjustment K-9 vehicle, Sheriff's Office ID 8300. Resolution B, budget adjustment insurance recoveries, Sheriff's Office ID 8299. Resolution C, adjusting social services 2019 budget for Code Blue, ID 8337. And budget Resolution D, 2018 budget appropriation and adjustment human resources, ID 8320. One appointment of Patty Van de Bogart to the Youth Services Board. And that's that. The union agreement is not on consent. Is there a motion for consent? Deborah moves, seconded by Glenn. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you so much. All right, committee reports. Let us start with Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. President Dean Claiborne, Chair.
No report. We will be meeting next Wednesday, 3:30, Old Jail Conference Room.
All right. Thank you, Leslin. For the Housing Committee, we will meet on January 25th. We had to move it because of Martin Luther King Jr. Day. We're meeting Friday, January 25th at 9:30 in this room. We will be talking about feedback we have gotten from the state on local money going into affordable housing. It's a relatively nuanced and interesting discussion. And we will mostly spend our time looking at the housing strategy and reviewing that, kind of where are we with the items in the strategy. So that's January 25th. Any questions? All right, Public Safety Committee, Rich John, Chair.
The Public Safety Committee has not met since the last legislature meeting. With the new 2019 schedule, our next meeting will be February 21st of 2019. And I had one item I just did want to report on to further your comments, Martha, about the importance of our staff. And we've got one of our number is retiring, and I didn't want to let the moment pass without mentioning Lee Shurtleff and his long, long service to the county. And for those who don't know Lee, he served on the Board of Elections for a long time. He also was instrumental in our building our Department of Emergency Response and is remarkably knowledgeable about radio systems. He has been a tremendous resource to our county and all of the towns and villages in the city on the technology necessary to have 911 calls and the dispatch system that we have built in our county. So I did just want to make sure that we had an opportunity to note that here and to say thank you to Lee for his dedicated service over, I think, 30 years to our county. And Jason, maybe you want to add something?
It's actually close to 31 years, I believe. But no, Lee has been wonderful to work with, and as he's transitioning to, he doesn't like the R word, so we won't use that word. He's going on to new opportunities, as he likes to say. But he's been, since I've been here, a great addition and a great partner, and as we've tried to tackle some issues, and he's working with Brian through the transition seamlessly, to be honest with you. So I keep in touch with him on a weekly basis, and things seem to be going well. He's also not going away. Yeah, he's going to be with us still on a part-time basis, helping out with some special projects. So we'll still see him around.
That's good. I'm glad to mention that he's still going to be with us.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So that's my report.
Thank you very much, Rich. Any questions for Rich? So that means so you're all set with your committee. I know people were talking during the break about committee meeting dates. So February 21st for public safety?
Third Thursday of the month at 3 o'clock.
Okay.
All right.
I will caution folks that it's a Rubik's Cube, and so if something sometimes something has to move that seems okay, but it has to move because something else has to move. So, but that's a good start that one group is already all settled. Health and Human Services Committee, Shauna Black, Chair.
We actually met Monday, that would be yesterday, and had a really great presentation by Lisa Holmes outlining the Veteran Services Agency that will start up in the next, 6 months or so.
Yes. Yep. Well, you'll see something in front of here for a public hearing for some charter changes after it goes to GO, and I would imagine 60, 90 days.
Yeah. So that's very exciting. We definitely had a few members of the community come in and talk to that effect. We also had Kenji Parker from the Southern Tier AIDS Program come in and talk about some of the housing assistance that is available currently for people with HIV and that are also part of the Health Homes Program. And Jude Rose, who's the child care planner that was recently hired by the Child Development Council, presented on her work. Our next meeting will be Thursday, February 7th at 4 p.m., hopefully.
Thank you. Right, okay. Thank you, Shauna. Any questions? Deborah.
I just wanted to note that the Ithaca Voice had an article about the fact that we're getting a veterans office. They quoted Leslin, and they seem very happy about it. So if you missed that, look for it.
The whole woo-woo that I said is spoken?
Yes.
They don't quite get the tone of your woohoo. It sounds much more dignified when it's written in the paper.
Audio next time.
Yeah.
That's great. I'm really excited about that new position. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Shauna. Facilities and Infrastructure Committee, Dave McKenna, Chair.
Thank you. F&I has not met since the last legislature meeting. We meet this Thursday at 3 o'clock in these chambers. Everybody is welcome to come. Hope to discuss a little bit about the Tioga Street project and ongoing renovations. Beyond that, I'd like to say a couple words about cooperative extension. Attended a facilities meeting the other day for that. There's another one coming up on Friday for a different project. Basically, the one I attended was to do with the building repairs and the new roof. The committee approved going ahead with the silicone roof and the roof trusses system that on there are going to be put on there. And they're also going to spray on the inside for mold, which is basically non-existent, but it's a sealer just to prevent anything from happening from previous leaks. And then I believe it's going to be spray painted on the inside on the new rafters. Rafter will be completed. I'm not quite sure if that's ahead of or behind the roof, but the roof is dependent on temperature. Has to be at least 30 degrees to do one side, or 32 degrees, and I think it has to be 45 to do the other side because it's a different foam. Nevertheless, that along paid for with a bond that was set aside by this committee about 3 to 4 years ago.
Okay, so that sounds like they're not coming here for money?
They already did. Three or four years ago, we just haven't used it yet.
Okay.
There was a requirement to start the use, and they did by redoing the entrance to the building by a certain date.
Okay.
And beyond that, I think it was a $300,000 bond that was set aside. So.
Yeah, there's some bond proceeds that haven't been expended yet that they have the ability to use for capital improvements. Rick and I spoke about it about a week or two, a few weeks ago, so I can circle back with Ken to get more details on it.
Okay. That sounds good. In the meantime, how many employees are up at the health department?
I can't tell you the exact number. I don't remember.
Yeah, I can't tell you the exact number. I know we've issued some KEFA. It's not so I think there's anywhere between 10 to 20, but they're not there at the same time.
Got it.
So they're in and out. They're not working. You know, there's an 8 to 5. There's a 20 there at the set time. So I think some come, go, use workstation, so on and so forth. So they're up and running, though, and I haven't heard any complaints. So.
Okay.
Okay, great.
I think the complaint's going to be when they have to move back.
Probably, I was going to say the same thing. Yeah. Right? You know, the nice thing is we can just shut their key fobs off. They can't get it. But yeah, I think they're enjoying the space.
All right, good. Thanks for that report, Dave. Appreciate that. Any questions for Dave? All right, thank you very much. So did you say that you, did they settle the committee time? Did you say you settled the committee time for F&I? Or you haven't finished that discussion?
I'm sorry, say it again.
Did you settle the F&I committee time for next year, for this year?
For this year, as far as I'm concerned, the same as last year.
Okay, got that?
Third Thursday, 1 to 3.
Yeah, this year's 3 to 5.
Yeah, that's right, 3 to 5. Yep, that's okay. That's fine with me. It's fine with everybody on the committee.
All right. Everybody on the committee? One to three on Thursday? Going, gone. Okay. By the way, this Thursday, I should have mentioned, Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul will be here. She'll be at Cornell. I got something in my inbox. I don't know who all was copied. I will send that to you tonight. There is joint purpose. She's going to be sort of ribbon cutting the new synchrotron redo, renovation, whatever, rebuild. It's called CHESS, and so that's a big deal. And I think also talking about the executive budget. So I think that's sort of dual purpose there. So I think it's 2:00 Thursday. So
where?
I'll send it up at Cornell on it's Wilson Labs on at 366 and Pine Tree. Yeah. So I'm afraid committee members might miss that. But did you have something else to say, David?
I was just curious if we knew anything about the time frame for that rebuild, because that's going to impact those highways.
I don't know. Maybe we'll hear more on Thursday. That's a good point. Okay. Transportation Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
Yes, Transportation Committee met on the 4th of January. We had a report from Fernando de Aragon regarding the MPO's long-range transportation plan. They're in the he's in the process of updating that plan, which has to be done to federal regulations every 5 years. And it has to do mostly with the monies that come in to the TIP, but there is also an opportunity to begin talking about other kinds of long-range planning, something that we really haven't had a lot of in this county for a long time. The other thing we did was to begin talking about the RFP with Katie Borghella of the Planning Department, the RFP for the Route 13 study, which the Transportation Committee I thought was going to be overseeing that, but apparently is not going to happen. There will be a steering committee, so apparently this is being shifted over to F&I. Sorry to see Transportation Committee not continuing next year. Transportation issues are not going to go away. The purpose of Transportation Committee was to focus our attention to that, similar to the kinds of things we're doing with housing. I want to really thank the members of the committee, Mike Sigler, Glenn Morey, Deborah Dawson, Shauna Black, and Dave McKenna has been sitting with us as the liaison from his committee. We have examined a lot of transportation issues from the airport, highways, mass transit, TCAT, the railroad. We've looked at bicycles. We've looked at trails and multimodal transportation. Transportation as a service in the county, where we're going with things like that. We need to continue to think about transportation in this county, or we'll never get anywhere. And you can't just continue to build up the city with $1,900 one-room apartments and think that how people get in and out of the city, how people deal with the transportation issues that they have, how they commute, whether they're parking in ride lots and anything else. We can't do that if we aren't paying real serious attention to it. So next year we won't have a transportation committee, but that doesn't mean transportation, as I said, will go away, and we will be paying attention to it, certainly with Dave's leadership and the F&I committee.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions? Deborah.
Well, I sat on the transportation committee, and it was an extremely educational experience for me. So I want to thank Mike for targeting these issues, and I want to assure him that PEAK will continue to focus on transportation issues in the county, and anytime you want to come talk to us about that, we'd be happy to hear from you.
Thank you.
Anybody else for Mike? All right. Thank you very much, Mike. We appreciate your leadership on that, and I know that, yeah, I agree the issues aren't going away. Government Operations Committee, Dan Klein, Chair.
Thank you. First of all, I just want to, I think, clarify some remarks I made earlier about the Boards of Assessment Review. So last year we did change a charter to say to make them non-mandatory anymore, but our assessment department department head has said that he may ask to convene some Board of Assessment Reviews for specific towns that are getting townwide reassessments or other special circumstances. So I heard some sighs of relief over there somewhere, but don't keep your May calendar open for now. Government Operations Committee will meet tomorrow morning, January 16th, 9:30 a.m. We will hear the same presentations about the Veteran Service Agency that Health and Human Services heard. And then we have a couple of sort of open-ended discussions, see where they go. One is about use of training funds for legislators and deciding how those might be allocated. One is looking at the question of county employees serving on advisory boards and just clarifying what our policy is about that. And then it's not on the agenda, but I want to try to squeeze it in, at least the beginning of discussion about taking a look at the meeting schedule for the legislature for the rest of this year. There's been some discussion about possibly skipping a meeting or possibly rearranging some meetings. Now that we almost have the committee meetings set, that's going to help propel that conversation forward. And that's my report.
Okay, thank you, Dan. Any questions? Thank you very much. The travel and training question is really important. I asked folks to send me any comments that they had or any particular conferences that they were thinking that they'd like to go to this year. Unless I missed them in my inbox, I didn't see anything, so I would have passed anything on. But I'm sure that this won't be the only time we talk about it. So we'll come back to Anna. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Mike Lane, Chair.
We did meet twice since our last legislature meeting. We met on January 8th, and we met just before this meeting to consider the resolution that we'll have in just a second. We spent most of the time at our meeting on the 8th in an executive session regarding the direct report process, which hopefully we're coming to a close. We have write-ups for two of the direct reports. We're waiting for two more, which I hope will be in this week. And then we will be circulating them for the other legislators to take a look at. So that's where that is at this point. Glad to take any questions. Other than that, I have this resolution E. And I'm not going to read the whole thing again because I already read it once, but it's the legislative approval of the tentative agreement for the blue-collar unit. I so move.
Seconded by Leslin, and that's 8359. In your red folders. Want to say anything about it, Jason or Mike? Or questions, discussion?
I want to catch one thing after this, though.
Ready to vote? All in favor, please raise your hand. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you, and congratulations to the negotiating team. Well done.
It was a toughie. Our labor negotiations, we had tough negotiators on both sides. And we're very lucky that working together, they came to an agreement. I want to thank Jason for some innovative ideas that he brought forth to the negotiations, which I learned about, and I think which made it workable for everybody. I think that's pretty important. So I agree. Thank you to all the team and on both sides. One thing I wanted to mention on my report I forgot to was this casino thing that was brought up. You may have read the paper. There's some issues with Del Lago, their financial structure. And Rick told us that it hasn't hurt our payments. However, if we don't know what the deal is with their bank or banks, finance that, I think it was over a $400 million casino project. So we got to keep track of that. Even if we're getting the payments we're supposed to get, if the deal falls and they aren't able to pay for it and they went bankrupt, it wouldn't be the first casino to go down. Think of what happened with in New Jersey, for example. Huh? So let's just keep our idea of being conservative with those funds as they come in.
Thank you, Mike. Any questions? All right. Planning Development and Environmental Quality Committee, Anna Kellis, Chair.
So we are meeting at 2 o'clock the 24th. That is not our normal time, but we changed our time. That is Thursday. So that it didn't conflict with the biannual NYSAC meeting. Two of the topics that we have on the agenda, one is potentially the forest discussion. Of course, that depends on whether or not a bid comes in. So we'll wait and see. And the other discussion is, as some of you may recall, we had put the funding for 4-H, for CCE, on contingent, and we wanted to see their capital plan. So at this meeting, they will be presenting their capital plan for 4-H.
And you'll have the IDA appointments. And
I will also have the IDA appointments.
Any questions for Anna? Deborah.
Just a comment. I've surveyed PEAK, which I guess is the successor to PDAC. So far, I have three people who are fine with this time and one who's...
We're trying to negotiate. So if we could actually move that one, it would be better for Leslie, who's not on that committee.
All right, we'll do that after.
Yeah. Budget committee, we need to talk about our time, too.
Yeah, everybody, it's not all done until it's all done. So so after we adjourn, which I expect to happen in a minute, then everybody should stick around and let's try to settle the committee structure, the committee schedule, because then that really, really helps to do it when we're all here. So please stick around for a couple minutes.
Well, one last thing, actually, then just PDEC will be split into the two, as you said. One of them will be housing and economic development. That will be, since that's the one I will be chairing, I just wanted to state that will be meeting the 4th. Everybody seems to be okay with it, so I just wanted to acknowledge that. And that will be meeting the 4th Thursday of the month from 9:30 to 11:30 in the morning. Thank you guys all for being flexible on that. And I think that is the 25th of February. So the 28th. It's the 28th of February.
Okay. All right, great. Anything else for Anna? All right, thank you very much. I just pulled up the Cornell invitation. It's the on the letterhead of New York State and also the Cornell High Energy Synchrotron Source. That's what CHESS means. For January 17th, 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock time, subject to change. That after 7 months of construction, the CHESS-U project is complete. Please join us in celebrating the success of the project that has energized advanced manufacturing in the Southern Tier. Speakers include Lieutenant Governor Kathy Hochul and CHESS Director Joel Brock. tour of the new facility to follow. That's on the Wilson Lab on Synchrotron Drive. I'll send that to everybody. And I believe that is open to the public. So that sounds like an interesting tour for anybody who can get there. All right. Can I get a motion on the minutes of January 3rd? Moved by Anna, second by Leslin. Any comments or questions? All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? That's unanimous. Thank you very much. Can I get a motion to adjourn? Moved by Shauna, seconded by Mike. All in favor, please raise your hands. Any opposed? You're opposed, Henry?
Nope.
Oh, okay. You got your hand up kind of late. All right, we're adjourned.
This is hooling.
Thank you very much.
Budget committee.
Stick around for the committee structure.